hear argument in 050645, Allstate Insurance versus Flint.
May it please the court, Mr. Krosno will present arguments for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. There is no dispute that Allstate has the right to pass through this ATPA fee to its insureds and to the plaintiff. The lower courts misconstrued the statutory and the regulatory scheme to retroactively deprive Allstate of its constitutional right to collect this fee in the name of curing a perceived problem, that being unauthorized insurance charges, which is not presented by the facts of this case. Unauthorized insurance charges are not at issue here because there's a Texas Department of Insurance rule, Rating Manual Rule 15, and that is at tab F of our brief on the merits. The same rule is essentially also at tab G of our brief, I believe, as well, in the form of section 5.205. So that rule expressly authorized, it's the commissioner's express authorization to insurers to recoup the ATPA fee from insurers in addition to premium due under the policy. And just as O'Neill was asking earlier, there's also a separate tax bulletin that the commissioner promulgated that said that specifically said that these recouped ATPA fees are not to be treated as premiums because that would make them subject to the premium tax liability. That would make them subject to premium tax. So the point here is that this is not an unauthorized charge because there is a rating manual rule that says we get to recoup this fee in addition to premium. An important point here is that this rule is presumed to be valid, and the plaintiff has the burden of showing otherwise. In other words, in response to the earlier question about who gets to decide this issue, the commissioner, there's a presumption that the commissioner gets to decide the issue, and the only way around that is if the plaintiff can show that the rule was not authorized or the rule does not, or that the rule is inconsistent or conflicts with Article 5.101, and they can't do either thing here.
The authority to recoup the fee is that may not be contested. The question is, how do you recoup it? Is it through an add-on fee or is it through the rate making?
And that's what the commissioner has spoken to with this Rule 15, by saying that you recoup the fee in addition to policy premium.
But he just hasn't. I mean, the dispute in the case is whether rate includes premiums or premiums include rates.
Right.
And depending on how you resolve that question, the rule means one thing or another.
That's true, but properly construed, the statute and the rule mean that rate is a component of premium, and therefore...
I understand, but to say the rule solves the problem just reads the dispute out of the case.
Right, and I will certainly address that issue.
Would you agree with that?
Excuse me?
Depending on whether rate includes premium or premium includes rate, it will mean something
different. That's the point of dispute here.
Right. The Court of Appeals seemed to be concerned that your argument would allow insurers to charge anything under 2135B. What's the response to that?
That did appear to be the Court of Appeals' concern. If you look at the Article 5.101 itself in Section 3K, it authorizes the commissioner to promulgate a rating manual, which is what the commissioner has done, and it requires insurers to follow that rating manual unless they get permission to use their own manual. The rating manual sets forth the rate and sets forth the factors and how you go about calculating the rate. And it also says in Rule 15 that this ATPA fee is going to be passed through in addition to premium. And that is the source of the authority here. And if you look at the Court of Appeals decision on the same day in the Service Life case, Your Honor, I think that's a perfect example of how the system works. In that case, Service Life came forward and tried to tack on a $50 policy fee in addition to the rate. And the commissioner objected to that, said, we're not going to let you do that. There was a regulatory proceeding. At the end of that proceeding, the result was the commissioner ruled that the insurance company couldn't do this. It went up through the court system, and at the end of the day, the result was that the insurance company could not do that.
Let me be sure I understand. Your position is that insurers cannot do whatever they want to do under 2135B, that the commissioner could still disallow fee or charge.
Under the rating manual promulgated, which we are obligated to follow, that we cannot do whatever we want to.
Under 2135B.
And under 2135B. But here, as a rate-regulated company, but here we do have authorization to collect this fee, and we did that.
Does 2135B apply whether you're rate-regulated or not?
Yes, it is a statute of general application. If you look at it, it's not limited to specific types of insurance, like for instance, Article 5.101 is limited to motor vehicle insurance.
Well, I'm just trying to get at the rationale for the Court of Appeals opinion, because they seem to think that if 2135B weren't somehow under 5.101. subservient to it, that it would defeat regulation. But your view is that 2135B applies to companies whether they're regulated or not.
To whether they're regulated or not? Yes, it's a statute.
Which is part of the general chapter 21.
It's a statute of general application. And, of course, when you look at Article 5.101 and you're construing what the term rate and it means, you should look first to that statute and the definition in that statute, and I think that's where the Court of Appeals went wrong here. They took a look at the definition of rate, which says rate is the charge for a particular line for each unit of exposure. That's the entire definition. But the Court of Appeals simply rewrote this definition. It said, well, we interpret this definition to mean that rate is the entire charge for insurance, period, without the concluding phrase for each unit of exposure. And then based on that revised definition, the Court of Appeals then went on to conclude that premium must be a component charge of the rate. And that's where the Court of Appeals went wrong, because by omitting part of the definition of rate, the phrase for each unit of exposure, the Court of Appeals violated the rule of statutory construction that every part of the statute must be or should be given effect so that no part is rendered meaningless. And when the omitted phrase is put back in the statute, as it was by the legislature, it shows that the rate cannot be the entire charge for insurance here. And that rate times the units of exposure is going to equal the premium. Now, the Court of Appeals also violated other rules of statutory construction here. One of the principal ones is that you should not construe a statute so as to reach an unconstitutional result if you can avoid it. And if you look at the American Alliance opinion, which was the Court of Appeal, which was an Austin Court of Appeals decision, which this court refused the writ on and made that opinion its own. In that case, the court held that the state's attempt to prevent insurers from recouping a valid expense of operation, which in that case was a tax on fire insurance premiums, that violated the due process clause and the equal.
But that argument's not being made here. I mean, they've acknowledged you're entitled to recoup it. It's just a question of where.
But they prevented us from recouping it. They've said we have to repay our insureds for recouping the fee in the only way we could do so according to the commissioner. The commissioner told us, don't include this in the premium. Recoup it outside the premium, which means outside the rate. And so the
But that's being argued as, I mean, that's in contention as well. If rate in 5101 is just premium, then why do insurance companies put other elements under 5101, like taxes and costs? Why do they choose to do that?
The rate under 5.101 is not just premium. There are fees and taxes that can go in that rate. We've talked about some here already. There's the premium tax is a perfect example. But when you have a situation where the commissioner comes in the exercise of its administrative expertise and says, we don't want to put it in that way because it's going to create a lot of problems here, then that is a different situation.
Show me where he says that.
Where the commissioner says in the exercise of it, the commissioner in Manual Rule 15, if you'll turn to tab, well, if you'll first look at...
I've got it.
If you'll turn to tab F and you go to Manual Rule 15, which is on the last page, it says, first of all, in subparagraph A, that each insurer is authorized to recoup the fee from the policyholder.
Everybody agrees with that.
And then if you're going to recoup the fee, if you elect to do that, then you have to include a notice under your policy where, and the notice says that this fee of $1 is payable in addition to the premium due under this policy. So if you look at subpart B of that rule under 1 and 2, both have the same requirement.
But this, I don't understand where this says that they can collect it outside the rate making. You collect it as a separate item.
Because properly construed, rate is a component of premium, and so when you're telling someone to recoup it outside of the premium, that's necessarily outside of the rate.
Well, it says it's payable in addition to the premium, and you say fees and taxes are collectible under 101.
Some fees and taxes are. Premium taxes is an example. But here, again, we have a rule that says do it that way.
I feel like we're going in circles because it just says it's payable in addition to the premium. Right. And you acknowledge that fees and taxes can be payable in addition to the premium under 101.
Unless the department directs otherwise. And the department has done that here. Maybe it will help if we look at the at the tax bulletin at tab G of our brief.
All that says is it's not premium.
Right.
It doesn't say where you charge it.
By telling you that it's not premium, they are telling you that it is not part of the rate either, because rate is a component of premium, as defined in the statute. And the Court of Appeals misconstrued the statute in ruling otherwise. So,
is it in the record whether the ATPA fee was part of the rate making or not?
Is it in the record? Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing that's in the record, there is no evidence of double dipping. There is a stipulation in the record in a Rule 11 agreement that the ATPA fee in this case was charged in addition to the premiums charged under the rate filing. So it was charged outside of the rate.
So the answer is no.
There is evidence.
I just want to know, is there any evidence that the insurer here, Allstate, included the dollar in the expense loading in the rate?
There is no evidence. There's no evidence of that.
One way or the other.
Well, by saying that we included it outside the rate, we are saying that we didn't put it in.
Well, they say you charged twice.
Well, that's their speculation, but they're throwing it out there in the absence of any evidence.
Well, my understanding is they're saying you can't tell whether someone charges twice, and that's the problem.
Well, he said you could tell.
I don't think he's accused you of charging twice. I just think he's saying you can't tell. And if you allow this to go outside the rate-making process, we won't ever be able to tell.
Well it clearly would be his burden to bring that forward, and he said you could tell if you looked at the rate filing, as I recall what he was saying. But there is no evidence that we did that here. And in fact, we would be subject to enforcement actions and administrative penalties if we had tried to do that. Because the rule says we get to recoup $1, and we don't get to recoup it twice, once in the rate and once outside of the rate.
The procedural posture of this case, counsel, this was a class suit also?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the trial court granted partial summary judgment?
Yes.
So this is an appeal from an interlocutory order
this
under
is an
Chapter 51?
This is an interlocutory appeal under Chapter 51.
Okay. If you look back at Roe and Miranda, which you mentioned on page 15 of your brief, Miranda involved a plea to the jurisdiction appeal under Chapter 51. Roe involved a class action, so the triggering conduct for when the amendments are effective and apply to the cases are different. Take a look at that. See that Miranda and Roe were both right on that point.
Yes, there's been a question raised by some of this court's opinions, and in looking back at the brief, the one decision that was not cited was the Snyder communications case. And in that case, the court had initially suggested that, or had said in their opinion, that the new conflicts definition applied to petitions for review filed on or after September 1st, 2003. Subsequently came back, and it's, in the final published version of that decision, and revised that language to refer only to the to a separate part of House Bill 4, which was the interlocutory appeal provision for class certification orders. So in doing that, the court at least suggested that there is a question in its mind as to whether this new conflict provision will apply here. It doesn't appear to by its terms, but I would also say that it is a clarification from the legislature as to what this court's conflicts jurisdiction is intended to be.
What was the case you mentioned, Snyder?
It's Snyder Communications. And the I'll look for that site for you, Your Honor, and I'll bring it back to you on rebuttal.
I just have one more quick question.
Yes.
Does the filed rate doctrine apply to these policies?
The filed rate doctrine applies to limit the discretion of courts to come in and second-guess the commissioner here on how to pass through these charges. Mr. Powers has argued that the filed rate doctrine just means that you can't charge anything other than the filed rate. But, of course, filed rate is part of the filed tariff doctrine, and under the filed tariff jurisprudence, it's clear that the regulatory scheme and the regulatory body's rules are part of that filed tariff. And so we have not violated the filed rate doctrine, but the lower courts did by coming in and second-guessing the commissioner in the exercise of its discretion as to how this rate or how this fee is going to be passed.
So your interpretation of the filed rate doctrine is something can be charged or is part of the filed rate if the commissioner directs how it will be assessed?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. If the commissioner directs you to charge it outside of the rate, as was done here, then we believe that can be done because that rule is part of the regulatory scheme and is part of the filed tariff.
I just want to make sure I understand. If and maybe I'm having trouble here, but if Rule 15 doesn't answer that question, if I'm confused by Rule 15 and can't see that it's a statement by the commissioner you have to charge it outside the filed rate, then how does the filed rate doctrine apply in that situation? If I don't read that as a directive from the commissioner.
If it does not apply to prevent us from...
If it doesn't answer the question, if 15 is not a clear directive from the commissioner that it has to be charged outside the filed rate, how do you apply the filed rate doctrine if Rule 15 doesn't answer the question?
Right. And again, and I won't go back up over our position on that, but the rate, it is a directive from the commissioner.
So your argument rises and falls on that.
But assuming that that it's not a directive, then I think we would be in a different situation under the filed rate doctrine.
So if this is not a directive, then it would be a violation of the filed rate doctrine.
I haven't thought that through, Your Honor, frankly, and that is an issue that has not been briefed. But I'm not sure about that.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Powers will present arguments with the respondents.
May it please the court, I represent respondent Fleming. I was prepared to talk about jurisdiction, but there's a couple issues I want to talk about on the merits, given what counsel just said. He made an absolutely critical admission on the dispositive issue on the merits in this case when he said the Article 5 101 rate is not just the premium. That's what I believe I heard him say in his argument, that it's not just the premium. And the fallout from that is, number one, his reliance on the rules falls. The rules say, in addition to premium, if the Article 5 101 rate is not just premium, then the rule doesn't answer the question. It's not a directive charging outside of the rate.
Do you agree with him that 2135B is a statute of general application?
It is a statute of general application.
And it would apply whether you were regulated or whether the rate was regulated or not.
I agree wholeheartedly with that.
The Court of Appeals, its analysis seems to have been driven by its concern that if the pieces of 2135B were not subject to regulation, then insurers could charge anything. Do you read it that way?
That they were interpreting the statute such that if the premium charge, what they say is that Article 5101 charge, is only regulated, then yes, those other seven charges in 2135B would be unregulated.
But that's true of unregulated insurers.
Right, but unregulated insurers are not regulated, so there's not a problem with that.
But it's just not clear. Why would you put 2135B under 5.101 in some instance for some carriers, but have a different construct using the same statute for other carriers?
Well, it's pretty simple. And that is, all insurers, here are the limitations of what charges they can impose. If you're an unregulated insurer, you charge all those, charge whatever you want. But there are specific statutes that apply that would sort of override the general 2135B. Let me give you an easy example. 2135B says that a sponsoring organization, this is a non-insurer, non-agent, may charge all these eight things. Well, clearly that's subsumed within a different statute that says you have to have a license to be charged a premium. You have to be an insurance company to do that. So 2135B is not this just everybody gets to do all this stuff. There are other statutes that rein that in, so to speak. What 5101 says is that for rate-regulated auto insurers, the charge for each unit of exposure is in the rate, because that's how we rate regulate.
But it doesn't include finance charges, for example.
It includes all the charges that are listed in 20, all the costs that they have for the insurance company, and that's an important distinction. 5101 only talks about the insurance company. If you have a premium finance company, which is regulated separately, none of this applies to that. 5101 doesn't apply to them. 5101 doesn't apply to the agent. It only applies to the insurance company. So,
But 5101 just doesn't say all of the charges permitted by 2135B are subject to regulation by the commissioner.
Well, it doesn't say that in those words. You're correct, Aaron. But here's the problem. If what they're arguing is that Article 5101 only applies to, at least I said all the way up to about 5 minutes ago, only the premium charge, and if you read through their briefs, that's exactly what they say, then all these other charges in 2135B are not rate regulated. Now, they point to Section 3K of Article 5101 as somehow giving authority over these other charges. But Section 3K talks about making a rating manual. what they say, a rate is just a premium rate. That only applies to the premium charges. Nothing in 2135B, as I think everyone agrees, gives the agency authority over the amount of those other charges. So if Article 5101 is only for premium charges, there's absolutely nothing in any either statute that gives the agency authority over those other charges. Therefore, whatever rate regulation happens in 5101, if you have the power to do an unregulated charge, like an additional policy fee, it renders 5101 meaningless. What's the point of regulation if you can have an unregulated add-on cost on top of that? It makes no sense, and that's what the Court of Appeals was saying.
Well, it makes some sense because you're still looking at the expenses and the loss ratios and setting a benchmark rate, and a fee that the legislature says a per policy fee that you collect outside of it might or might not be part of that calculus.
Well, the problem is the analysis that they have to make brings you to 2135B that says, hey, we can charge these additional charges. Well, this one, as a matter of what they argue, and of course we disagree that that's what the commissioner said, that's outside of the Article 5101 rate, but assuming that they're right, then that same analysis opens up all seven other charges in 2135B without any regulatory authority. The only regulatory authority, under their interpretation, is 5101, which is only premium.
The commissioner's sort of quiet in this case. Sir, can we make anything of that?
I used to be general counsel at the Department of Insurance, and I learned long ago not to make any assumptions about the Commissioner of Insurance and what he or she may be thinking, so I'll pass on that one. I wanted to respond quick other point.
I have one other question, and that is the counsel said that there was no evidence either way whether the fee was included in the rate making. What's your view?
Of course, my first point is it doesn't matter because this is a statutory interpretation case, and it could happen. But the evidence is two things. One, that we agreed that they did not include it in their premium, but of course that doesn't mean it wasn't in their rate. What is in the evidence is the rate filing form, I believe it's Appendix 6 to our brief, that the Department of Insurance required them to file. And what that rate filing form clearly and unequivocally says is they include taxes, licenses, and fees in their rate.
As a percentage.
I'm sorry?
As a percentage.
That's how all expenses, all the expenses are done in there.
If an insurance company has millions of dollars that they're charging and you get a percentage of taxes, license, and fees, I don't have a clue what that's composed of.
Well, having gone through many rape cases, I would suggest you really don't want to find that out. It's not a lot of fun.
But you can't find it from that form. You've got to go somewhere else.
No, but what that form requires is that taxes, licenses, and fees be included in their numbers and then recouped through the rate. There's no exception there for the ATPP, none whatsoever. So whatever taxes, licenses, and fees they have, they got to put it in there. Let me also, I wanted to, just following up on the admission that the Article 5101 rate is not just premium, it also goes to the bulletin. The bulletin talks about premium. They've admitted it doesn't give an insurance company any advice one way or the other on the issue before the court of whether it's supposed to be in the rate. I want to come back to just one of your questions in the previous case about, isn't this, wouldn't this be unfair to do this now? Two quick things. One, as they've just admitted, they were not given bad instructions. They were told not to put it into premium. Premium does not mean don't put in the 5101 rate, as they've just admitted. But more importantly, a case that came to mind that came out of this court just a few weeks ago, probably going to pronounce it incorrectly, Feist, I think, versus State Farm. And in that case, if I remember the facts correctly.
What do you think about that dissent?
I'm sorry.
Never mind.
Okay. Thank you. The thing about that case is that, as I recall, the Department of Insurance had thought there was some mold coverage and had an advice there, and they thought that for a long time. And it turns out that didn't matter, according to the majority of the court. And I would submit that if it's fair to say to consumers, sorry, you got some bad advice from TDI and TDI made a mistake 10 years ago, the rule of law applies, then that same rule should say, sorry, insurance companies, that you had all those smart lawyers who led you astray for whatever reason based on what the Department of Insurance said, but the rule of law is what we're going to follow.
Are there some insurance companies that are charging the ATPA fee through the filed rate?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I have to say, it's not in, that's not in the record. But next point I wanted to address is that the 2135B, somehow this difference of rate-regulated companies, there's nothing in 2135B that distinguishes which type of companies. And if
that's the whole point. If it applies to everybody, then why should it be governed by 5.101?
Just like every other, just like the licensing statute is covered. 2135B says a sponsoring organization may charge premiums. Why shouldn't they be able to do that? They don't have an insurance license, but 2135B, if the court is going to read it on its own without looking at the entire insurance code statute, then the conclusion it would have to come to is that a sponsoring organization without a license can charge premiums. And that's just not the case, because you have to read the statute as a whole. And it's the exact same thing in this case. You can't read 2135B in isolation, because there's another statute that talks about rate-regulated auto insurers that you have to bring into that analysis. And the only way to make that statute meaningful is the way the Court of Appeals read.
You support your argument with the structure and overall purpose of the statute. Is there any specific wording that you can point to that says this fee must be included in rate making, or all taxes and fees must be included in the rate?
There's nothing that says this particular fee in the statute. What the statute says is the rates filed have to be just, reasonable, and adequate. And what this court has said in the HLMP versus PUC case, PUC versus HLMP case, is that that means all taxes must be recouped. But the Department of Insurance.
Any statutory language that says that?
I'm sorry?
Any language in the statute that says all taxes and fees must be included in the rate?
No, those specific words are not in the statute. Another thing I want to point out to the court is, and they've said it at their brief in arguing for jurisdiction, that the Court of Appeals, and I'm quoting here, required Allstate to reimburse previously collected ATP fees to insureds with no means of recouping those fees. That's it. Page XI of the brief, and I believe they again said today that the Court of Appeals said that we have to repay money. The Court of Appeals did not order any such thing. The court below, the trial court, entered a declaratory judgment and said, this is the law. They did not order one penny to be paid back by Allstate.
So nobody's seeking recovery of the money.
No, I didn't say nobody's seeking recovery of money. I said the trial court did not order them to pay any money back. They're claiming, and if you look at the brief, it's exactly what they say, and they said it again today, that the Court of Appeals constitutionally took some money from them, and I'm quoting, required them to reimburse previously collected ATP fees to insureds. Where is that requirement? It's not in the summary judgment, and it's certainly not in the Court of Appeals opinion.
It's on the horizon.
I'm sorry? I'll tell you where it's at. It's not on the horizon. They agreed to it. They're going to repay back money because they entered a Rule 11 agreement in order to get the benefits of limiting the damages they're going to have to pay. They entered a Rule 11 agreement with us and said, we'll go up on this rule, the question of law, and if we lose, we agree to pay back the money. That was their agreement. It's not a Court of Appeals ordering them to do it, and there's a big difference, because the Court of Appeals, and they're claiming that the Court of Appeals did to try and justify jurisdiction. And I wanted, it was what I prepared to talk about was jurisdiction. I want to talk about a couple things along those lines quickly. American Alliance, the case they hang their hat on, is very clear. Insurers must be allowed to recoup taxes and regulatory fees through the rates. That's what the words that court used are. It's got to be collected through the rates. And that goes back to the fundamental rule of rate regulatory law, laid down by this court in PUC versus HLMP, and followed all the time by regulatory agencies that I've appeared before, that all taxes are recouped as an expense of operation through the rate. So there's no conflict at all with American Alliance.
What effect do you think a decision in the previously argued case, the mid-century case, will have on this case?
Well, I think when the court hopefully rules in our favor on that case, that it's going to be sort of the same merits issue, but this court needs to address jurisdiction first. So it may be that you never even reach that issue because, in our opinion, this court does not respectfully have jurisdiction to hear the Allstate case.
So mid-century just won't affect this case at all?
Well, it may, depending on how you rule on jurisdiction. If you rule on jurisdiction, say, we don't have jurisdiction, then you're right. Whatever happens in the mid-century case would not matter. If you decide
so
you
just go back and continue to litigate and then come back up? Or?
Well, there will be an issue in that case. Obviously, that depending on what the ruling is of the court, if you uphold that determination, then they are, of course, bound by the determination that they illegally collected that charge, and then we would litigate what amount of money they have to repay.
Or the other way.
Or if they don't have to repay. And I want to point out that in American Alliance, where the court ruled that you collect taxes and fees through the rates, that's exactly what the Court of Appeals held here. They did not say they don't get to collect it. They said you get to collect it, but through the rates. In fact, through the legal method that they used to collect every other tax and fee that they incurred. Every other tax and fee they pay is collected through the rates. That's the way you do it in rate regulation. You collect it through the rate like every other expense, whether it's a percentage tax, whether it's a flat fee tax. It's always collected, as this court ruled, through the rates as an expense of operation. That's what American Alliance says. The summary judgment in this case, at the record, page 393, said they can collect this rate, this fee, through the rate debt. The Court of Appeals, again, says you can collect it. Gotta do it legally, though, through the rate. And in Greasing, of course, they went exactly to this point, footnote 7. They made this very distinction in talking about American Alliance. They said, we note that our conclusion is consistent with American Alliance because our reading of Articles 5101 and 2135B requires the Commissioner of Insurance to include taxes when setting the benchmark rate and when approving a filed rate. There is no inconsistency between those two cases. And while in the earlier case, Farmers talked about American Alliance, if American Alliance were in conflict with this case and an opinion of this court, as Allstate is arguing, then the farmers' companies would have been briefing that in their briefs to this court. And they didn't. If you read their briefs, both their brief on the merits and their reply brief, they don't talk about American Alliance because they know there's absolutely no conflict between the American Alliance case and the courts of appeals opinions in this case. I want to address probably the last item I'll have time for is what conflicts standard applies to this case. And, of course, it is our position that the old conflict standard applies. Government Code 22.225E was contained in HB4 in the 2003 session. And under HB4, the general rule was that all statutory changes only applied to actions filed after September 1, 2003. This action was filed before September 1, 2003. Therefore, under the general rule, that change to subsection E would not apply unless there's something else in HB4 that makes it apply. And that's where we turn to section 1.02 of HB4. Two changes were made to 22.225, subsection D, which doesn't apply here, and subsection E. Okay? And then in section 1.05, here's what the legislature said. They're changing to subsection D. That's a subsection that doesn't apply here. Apply to cases where the petition for review is filed after September 1, 2003. By saying only subsection D has that exception, they clearly meant that the subsection E change, the one that's issued in this case, does not apply even though the petition for review was filed after September 1, 2003. in response to one last point in response to your question about other insurance companies, here's the problem that I believe this court needs to look at. If they are correct that the 5101 premium charge, it is just the premium charge, and the rule required, because this is what they argue, the rules require them to collect it outside of the Article 5101 rate. Let's assume this court assumes that that's true. Here's the problem. Every insurer that collected with it within the rate is in violation of that rule and then subject to liability, therefore. That's all the time I have. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Powers.
I again want to emphasize here the required deference to the commissioner's expertise and pose this question. If the commissioner's rule, Manual Rule 15, does not do what we or does not say what we say it does, which is that you've got to charge this in addition to premium, meaning in addition to the rate by definition. If it doesn't do that, then what is the purpose of the rule? Because everything else, by definition, if that weren't the case, you would have to put this fee in the rate just like anything else that wasn't exempted by a specific rule. So under
their
interpretation,
the purpose of the rule would be to show that it's not premium for tax purposes and to let the consumer be notified that they're being charged this fee in accordance with the statutory mandate.
But again, the and this is where we come back to under the statutory scheme and under the well-accepted definition of rate and premium in case law, not only in this state but across the country, rate is a component of premium.
But let me follow up on a point that Mr. Powers made. Do you agree that taxes are properly included in the rate under 5101, other types of taxes?
Unless they're exempted by the commissioner, as they were here by rule.
So rate can include taxes?
It can.
So it's not just premium?
They would be included, those taxes would by definition be included in the premium. Because they're part of the, if you're putting them in the rate, then they are part of the premium. Because rate is a component of premium.
But if you take the opposite view, the premium is a component of rate, then I guess your argument is then what's the point of Rule 15? Because you're not telling insureds, you're also paying expenses.
You're not telling them anything.
Light bills, taxes, in addition to premiums. You're just telling them you're paying this in addition to premiums.
Yes, it's meaningless without if you interpret it that way.
Except that the legislature made it clear how to ferret that out by putting the notice to the taxpayer, especially notice.
That's in the rule.
In the rule, they made it clear that you charge this in addition to premium.
But I thought the legislature directed that they put that notice on the policy.
The legislature did not. That's the commissioner's rule. The legislature imposed this fee. And then we have this constitutional requirement that we be allowed to pass that through in some form or fashion to our insureds. The commissioner, in its exercise of its administrative expertise, said pass this through outside the rate. That way it won't create additional premium tax liability and make the insured have to pay not only the dollar but the 1.6% tax. Premium tax that would accrue if you put this in the premium. And there are a host of other reasons that Mr. Rogers described earlier. Why?
Is it true that some insurers are going to be dissatisfied with our opinion, whichever way it goes, because some go through the rate-making process and some add on the fee?
There is absolutely no evidence in the record that insurers were putting this fee in their rates. The evidence is that we did not do it that way. We did not, in fact, do it that way. And I believe that's the evidence in the farmer's case. There is no evidence that we that we put it or farmers put it in the rate. We have said that we collected it outside of the rate, and they clearly would have had the burden of coming forward and showing that we are double dipping by putting it in the rate. So there is no...
Presuming there are insurance companies that are including it in their rate, if there are, what would your position do to them?
If they are, they are in violation of the Manual Rule 15, which tells them not to put it in the rate, to collect it in addition to premium. So there's just no evidence that other insurers are going to be affected in that way. And if they are, it's because they didn't follow the directive of the commissioner. We did follow the directive of the commissioner here. And they are saying, well, you shouldn't have listened to the commissioner. You should have listened to our interpretation of the statute, this statutory scheme that we didn't know about. You should have listened. You should follow what we have to say and what the courts have retroactively said about this rather than what the commissioner said about that.
Let me ask you, do you know any other example of a commission rule like this or some other pass-through charge?
No, I think this is a pretty unique example telling you to collect this outside of the rate. And again, it comes back to the commissioner's likely concern that this shouldn't generate additional premium tax liability that ultimately is going to be borne by the insured, and as well the administrative difficulties in trying to stick this dollar into the rate filing and have it come out and just be a dollar ultimate charge to the insurer when you've got a flexible rating scheme and all these factors where you're trying to stick in this dollar and make it come out a dollar on the other side. I think that was the concern here. And that was a legitimate concern.
Any further questions?
One other question. With regard to conflicts jurisdiction, do you think whether the old or the new amendments, that is pre or post September 2003 applied, turns on when the petition for review was filed in this court?
No, we do not, because we believe we have met either standard.
Well, that wasn't my question. With regard to whether the new or the old conflict statute applies, you think depends upon when the petition for review was filed in this court. But you think you meet the conflict standard under either pre or post 2003?
We think we meet it under either standard. The in terms of the effective date, the statutory enactment provision of House Bill 4 seems to indicate that it applies to actions filed after September 1, 1993.
This one
was filed before. Under that reading, we are under the old standard. And as I tried to explain earlier, and I didn't have the case site for you, our concern is with a decision of this court in the Snyder Communications case, which is 142 Southwest 3rd, 295. And that's actually the final version of the opinion. There was some sort of previous opinion that would just be available in Westlaw or on the Texas Supreme Court Journal. That created some concern in our mind that we didn't want to concede that point. And as I also mentioned earlier, we do believe that this is a clarification.
I'm confused. Your brief says on page 15 that based on Roe, the legislative definition of conflict would appear to apply here because all states petition for review was filed after September 1, 2003.
If you look at Roe, it talks about the...
Well, I just want to know, do you think the operative action is when the lawsuit was filed, the action was filed, or when the petition for review was filed? Your brief says petition for review. I thought you just now said action was filed.
If I can clarify, my reading of the statute is that it applies to actions filed after September 1, 2003. My concern in my briefing was based on some of this decision of the court that I've signed.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The call is submitted, and that concludes the arguments for today, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All right. Oye, oye, oye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.